disturbed
the moment they are disturbed
by the blinking of the eyes.
Also.
Translation. Krishna's face is decorated Mukunda. Du musst doch leise sprechen. Warum? Weil sonst alle dich hören. Das vielleicht schön wäre in einem anderen Umstand, aber doch nicht hier. Also dezent, leise, einfühlsam. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments, such as earrings resembling sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks brilliant, and his smiling is attractive to everyone. Whoever sees Lord Krishna sees a festival. Now we know how to keep the mood of the festival going. We will simply have the constant Krishna darshan by pure Krishna consciousness. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see, but may do too. The devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. As stated by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 7.3, Manusyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam apisiddhanam kaschin man vetitanvata. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Unless one is qualified to understand Krishna, one cannot appreciate the presence of Krishna on earth. Among the Bhojas, Prishnis, Andakas, Pandavas, and many other kings intimately related with Krishna, the intimate relationship between Krishna and the inhabitants of Braj is especially to be noted. That relationship is described in this verse by the word Nityat Savang Natapitu Drishibir Pibantya. The inhabitants of Vrindavan especially, such as the cowherd boys, the cows, the calves, the gopis, and Krishna's father and mother, they're never fully satisfied, although they saw Krishna's beautiful features constantly. Seeing Krishna is described here as Nityotsava, a daily festival. The inhabitants of Vrindavan saw Krishna almost every moment, but when Krishna left the village for the pasturing grounds, where he tended the cows and calves, the gopis were very much afflicted because they saw Krishna walking on the sand and thought that Krishna's lotus feet, which they dared not place on their breasts because they thought their breasts not soft enough, were being pierced by broken chips of stone. But even thinking of this, the gopis were affected and they cried at home. These gopis, who were therefore the exalted friends of Krishna, saw Krishna constantly, but because their eyelids disturbed their vision of Krishna, the gopis condemned the Creator, Lord Brahma. Therefore the beauty of Krishna, especially the beauty of his face, is described here. At the end of the 9th canto, in the 24th chapter, we find a hint of Krishna's beauty. Now we are proceeding to the 10th canto, which is considered Krishna's head. The entire Srimad Bhagavat Purana is the embodiment of Krishna's form, and the 10th canto is his face. This verse gives a hint of how beautiful his face is. Krishna's smiling face, with his cheeks, his lips, the ornaments in his ears, his chewing of betel nuts, all this was minutely observed by the gopis, who thus enjoyed transcendent bliss, so much so that they were never fully satisfied to see Krishna's face, but instead condemned the Creator of the body for making eyelids that obstructed their vision. The beauty of Krishna's face was therefore much more appreciated by the gopis than by his friends, the cowherd boys, or even by Yashoda Mata, who was also interested in decorating the face of Krishna. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Askatyade Shatane
Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
verse, the extraordinary beauty of Sri Krishna is described. It is said that his ears are beautiful and there are earrings which resemble sharks. His face is beautiful, decorated with ornaments. His cheeks are brilliant and he is smiling attractive to everyone. A little further description of the extraordinary beauty of Lord Krishna is given in the Matya Lila, where it says, Mukta hara bhagapanti indradanu pinjatati pitambara vichuri sanchara krishna nava jaladada jagachasya upara varishase lilamritatara. Yes. Krishna wears a pearl necklace that appears like a chain of white ducks around his neck. The peacock feather in his hair appears like a rainbow, and his yellow garments appear like lightning in the sky. Krishna appears like a newly risen cloud, and the gopis, so this is how, so far, this is a very beautiful analogy. Imagine the sky and a especially wonderful blue cloud. Then there's a chain of white ducks flying before the cloud. At the same time, however, there is a rainbow coming. I remembered when we were with the devotees from Hamburg driving from Dole to Abenteuer, that we saw this wonderful scenery of a rainbow coming, and we, for almost half an hour, we practically could not talk about anything else than the rainbow and different theories of the rainbow and how Krishna is related to the rainbow and so on and so forth. So here this picture, which you might remember from there, or you have seen certainly in your lives, is used for Krishna. He's like the rain cloud, the ducks who fly in a chain are like a chain of pearls. The rainbow is like, or let us say, Krishna is like the rainbow. You have to do it this way. And now, the devotees of Krishna are described in relation to Krishna. They are like a newly grown, the gopis appear like newly grown grains in the field. Constant rain of nectarian pastimes fall upon these newly grown grains. And it seems that the gopis are receiving beams of life from Krishna, exactly as grains receive life from the rains. It's a very nice analogy. Krishna is like the life-giving rain cloud, and we, the devotees, are like grains who dry up totally without contact to Krishna. Now this is, of course, a verse which some of us who come from the Western countries, it's difficult for us to get into the nectar of this verse. But here's another verse. Those who do not regular, who only eat bread. It's for Germans who eat bread. Germans need bread. And I remember there was a revolution once by the BBT staff in Switzerland, because the Swiss devotees would always serve them Röschlis. But the Germans said, we can't see this Röschlis any longer. We need bread. Do you understand our needs? So the devotees who only eat bread. The Sanskrit word, the direct translation is grains. But do not hear regularly about the pastimes of Krishna, will fall down from the transcendental level and come to the material level in their lives. They will dry up. Yes. This is the same point. Now it is described in this verse, whoever sees Lord Krishna sees a festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see. But the devotees are angry. Why are the devotees angry? The answer is, they are angry at Lord Brahma for creating such useless eyelids, such useless eyes, who create a disturbance by their momentarily blinking. See, if your eyes would not blink, it would cause a problem to the skin which covers the eyes. It needs constant moisture. And also, that's the main reason, really. The other reason is dust particles and everything is just moved away with the liquid. So, the devotee said, Brahma, why did you have to make the creation like this? Are you not knowing that this is actually painful? It is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when the onlooker of Krishna's face becomes dissatisfied, he thinks, why did the Creator give me why didn't the Creator give me thousands and millions of eyes? You know, they should be all over the body. Why has he given me only two eyes? Even these two eyes are disturbed by blinking, which keeps me from continuously seeing Krishna's face. Thus one accuses the Creator of being dry and tasteless due to engaging in severe austerities. No wonder you have meditated too much and done this austerities. No idea. Nonsense, Prabhu. The Creator is only a dry manufacturer. He does not know how to create and set things in their proper places. And then they become very sarcastic. The Creator says, let those who will see Krishna's beautiful face have two eyes. Just see the lack of consideration exhibited by this person posing as a creator. Just see. If the Creator took my advice, he would give millions of eyes to the person who intends to see Sri Krishna's face. If the Creator will accept this advice, I think then I would say that he is competent to do his work. Only then. And there are other verses like this. Now, Lord Brahma, getting into the ecstasy of seeing Krishna's form, stops his ecstasy for the benefit of all of us. And for a moment stops this. Because if a conditioned soul hears so much of the holy Dham, the form, and the loving pastimes of Lord Govinda, then the conditioned soul will develop a grave doubt Maybe this is only a fairy tale. Maybe this is only imagination. Maybe this is something which is taken from this world and develop the mentality of a prakriti, sahajiya, someone who thinks that essentially there is no difference between the transcendent body of the Lord and the Lord himself. See, the prakriti sahajiyas do have a philosophy. They say, Lord Nityananda bleeded. Krishna was shot in the heel. Therefore, and I also bleed. It is conceivable that I'm hurt by an arrow. So if Krishna is divine, then also my body, in my body is the divine essence. I'm a child of divinity. So let me do as Krishna. That is their conclusions. After all, see, there is a great similarity between me and Krishna. Lord Nitai. He bleeded, I bleed. See, is that not the proof? This is what the learned Sahajiya say. The unlearned, and that's most of them, just do impossible. I mean, anyways, so distasteful. If you want, I could explain in half an hour the philosophy of the prakriti sahajiyas, and you'd be amazed of the learned prakriti sahajiyas, which runs through this whole thing. So Brahma, knowing this difficulty of the conditioned soul to understand real things which are of a transcendental dimension, now stops himself and explains the transcendental form of the Lord, how it is absolutely different from ours. And it's highly interesting and necessary for devotees to understand this second verse. Yesterday we discussed the first verse which we chant every morning. Today we will discuss the second one. And I want to read it with all of you, because you know it from... just find it, please. Here it is. It is in Brahma Sanghita, 5th chapter, text 32, really. Yesterday we had text 30. So please... chant with me.
Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pashyanti panti kalayanti chiranya ganti ananda chinmaya sadujala vigrasya govinda mari purusham namam vajami.
The translation reads, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, substantiality, and is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possess in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. Yes. Both spiritual and mundane. So, today we will discuss three points from this verse. First of all, Govinda's form, which is described here as being Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Second, we will discuss this sentence which might be intriguing to you. Each limb has the full-fledged functions of all the other organs. And the third point we would like to discuss is that Lord Govinda eternally sees, maintains, and manifests also the infinite universes. This verse is spoken in order to explain the transcendental nature of Krishna's form. Now, Krishna's form, this is the first thing we need to understand, has some semblance with our forms. Wait a minute. This is wrong. We have some semblance with Krishna's form. It's very important that we say it this way around. Why? Krishna's form and the holy Adam is first. It's the origin. Therefore, Lord Brahma always says Adi Purusham. He's the original person. And everything else is only a reflection of that spiritual reality. We have everything what we have as a reflection from the original world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, now it's something for you. I know we do have one or two intellectuals amongst us, so this now is for you. Notwithstanding such semblance, the two are wholly different from one another. The unwholesomeness of matter is its defect, but in the spirit there's variegatedness which is free from any fault or contamination. The soul and the body of Krishna are identical, no difference, whereas the body and soul of fallen creatures are not so. And then he continues. So, Krishna's transcendental form is ever beyond the faults of the material energy. It is full of eternality, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. The example which is given, how the Lord's form is totally transcendental and can perform many, many, and each organ can perform many functions, are two. One is Mahavishnu. In order to impregnate for a conditioned soul, he requires his creative organs. Mahavishnu, however, simply looks onto the creation, and by his eyes, the living entity, or by his glance, the living entities are put into this creation. He just looks, and by his looking, he performs the function of the creative organs. That's the example which is given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how each limb of the Supreme Lord can perform all the other functions of the other organs. In the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, we find another example. We find how Krishna meets a washerman who has beautiful cloth, as he finds out. And Krishna, being a very good dresser, that's one of his qualities, immediately goes through the cloth and chooses some pieces of cloth to dress himself with. The washerman says, hey, what are you doing here? You're taking the cloth of the king, Kamsa. Good, said Krishna, and began to dress himself. At this, the washerman became totally enraged and said, how can you take the cloth of the Krishna of Kamsa? But Krishna took just his hand and touched his head, and then the head just was cut off from the shoulders. And then Krishna didn't look, you know, he just went to the cloth and he distributed them amongst his friends. And they all came dressed like kings into Mathura. Kamsa was shocked. They have my clothes on. You know, this is really provocative. imagine we would go to the Nishingananda's clothes. You know, we would take his silk dhoti, which he really liked, and he would take his pavitra and his very beautiful studied edge jumper, you know, in the brahmachari style. We would sell, and we would put white cloth instead to him. He would be highly provocated. He would say, "Das geht aber nicht," and would be totally enraged at us. So that's what Krishna did for Kamsa. Imagine, that was heavy. It was very, very heavy, if you imagine. And then he just killed his men who opposed him. So this is, of course, in tune with Krishna's mission. He wanted to relieve the world from the thorn of Kamsa. But the point which is here of interest, one normally would have to use a sword to perform such a clear cut. But Krishna did it with his body, his transcendent, with his hand, which is as soft as lotus petals. We hear that Krishna's body in that age was so soft, really, that when a leaf touched his body, his transcendental body, it would leave an imprint of the body. He doesn't have... The spiritual body is quite different. If we touch a leaf, I mean, nothing happens. Instead, the leaf gets our sweat. And now begins to attract mosquitoes. But when Krishna, leaf touches Krishna's body, it does have a change, even. Because the leaf is also a devotee, and it serves Krishna like this. So he responds to the leaf. So there is very a great science of Krishna. Transcendental body, but when he works, when he does something, he is able to perform the function of any other limbs, and furthermore, he can perform the function of all limbs with any one of them. Bhaktisiddhanta says he is an indivisible whole, cannot separate one part from the other, and perfect transcendental entity. This is something which we need to think about. We have to understand Krishna does not have a set of senses like us, where senses are imposed on us. All your senses are really put over you like a glove which is put over your hand when it's cold in the winter. No, the external senses of the conditioned souls are different from the soul. But Krishna's senses, we must always understand, they are not different from the whole Krishna. And therefore, they can do everything what Krishna can do. Therefore, it is described, he is an indivisible whole. Do you understand this point? Your senses are just put over you. An ear. Like a snowman. You know, in the winter, Kunti made a snowman. She put a carrot. I don't know if she's so creative, but normally a child puts a carrot in the head. And then some cold ice. And then here's the carrot, and then the other things come as children. We put that in the ears, and some stones for the mouth to indicate the stony teeth that he can eat something. It's hard enough teeth, and a broom in the hand, and then he's standing there. This is how we are standing in the material world, you know. We have a nose and tongues, some ears, some other senses which are totally separated from each other and the whole. Krishna, however, is all this transcendental, effulgent body, and it all has the same power and the same energy. Therefore, Krishna can just look and put the living entities in the world. He can just take his hand, just do wonders with it. Krishna can do everything with each one of his limbs. He can, Prabhupada in his books makes the point of offering prayers. When Krishna eats, he actually eats with his eyes and also with his ears. He doesn't do the same thing with the food as we do, because we do it with the mouth only or with the tongue. But Krishna can just eat with his ears by hearing the prayers and seeing the food. That's how he takes our food. He actually eats it, but in a different way than a conditioned soul does. Krishna, when he eats, anyway, this is all such vast subject, we must concentrate ourselves a little bit and so on. So now we will, here is a verse from the Upanishads where the transcendental body is described and where it is shown how he is totally different from us. It's from the Svetashvatara Upanishad 3.18. He has no feet or hands, yet he is the swiftest runner and can grasp anything. Though without eyes or ears, in the sense of material eyes or ears, he sees and hears. Nobody knows him, yet he is the knower and the object of knowledge. Object of knowledge. He is the one to be known. Sages describe him as the supreme original personality of Godhead. Now, it is very interesting to note that although Krishna senses are totally different from others' senses, still our senses are deriving the force and power from Krishna. We had this yesterday a little bit, but there's a verse also, another verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Though you have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory power. So now, I want to come to speak in a language which is more, let me say, many of us appreciate this language more to understand Krishna's transcendental form. So wonderful that the Bhagavatam has high philosophy, but now we will make it very clear, and I think now everyone will start to listen very carefully. Jiva Goswami wants to really bring out how the Lord's form is different from us. And he gets really on the level now of the conditioned soul by describing to us the prayer which Rukmini said. Now, all you Matajis, please listen very carefully, and all you young boys, please listen very carefully. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet, says Rukmini Devi, becomes totally befooled. And thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse, a living dead man, covered with skin, whiskers. You know, actually, the cat has whiskers. These are the beard, you know. Whiskers. Nails, head hair and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites. This is a big thing in Kali Yuga. We are all so full of parasites, you have no idea. Everyone has a town of parasites, a whole population of them in their down tract. Especially they like it when you eat pizza with Hefe inside. Fecus, mucus, yes, bile and air. So she says that an effect that if you become attracted to the body of a man, Hare Krishna, isn't that something relevant? have you become attracted? You are the greatest fool. From this weekend now, you know, usually when in our Bhagavatam verses, when we hear the verses, the woman has to think. There are always statements about the women, that how they are conditioned and totally this and that and so on, and the women then have to always think. Some of them cannot do this, but because of some lack in the brain, but they always have to think, well, this applies also to the men. Now here we as a man have to think. When Rukmini says, a woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet, you have to think, a man who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of Krishna's lotus feet, but becomes totally attracted to a woman, then you become attracted to a living corpse covered with skin. Some women also have whiskers. Yes, at a necessary shop, women have such things for their visas. You can buy them their head hair and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, face. It's the same thing. We have to change this time. And Jiva Goswami makes a comment, and I want to read it to you verbatim. This statement of Srimati Rukmini Devi describes the spiritual blissful nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's hair and other limbs and senses, which are different from the material limbs and senses of the embodied souls. And then he goes, then please hear the logic of Jiva Goswami. So he has said, the fact that Rukmini Devi says, anyone who becomes not attracted to you, but to a husband, to a man of this world, means that there is a great difference between you and your transcendental body and the body itself of a man of this world. Do you understand her logic? So now Jiva Goswami makes this point, and then please appreciate Jiva Goswami. Then you will hear some of his transcendental brain now going. When the demigod Brahma blessed Hiranyakashipu that he would not be killed by different varieties of living entities, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.3.37, Brahma said that no one alive or dead would kill Hiranyakashipu. That means both that Hiranyakashipu could be killed by the claws of Nrisimhadev, claws being neither alive nor dead, and also that Hiranyakashipu could be killed by the spiritual form of Lord Nrisimhadev, which is neither alive in the same way material bodies are alive, nor is dead. You understand? Brahma says to Hiranyakashipu, yes, nothing dead or alive will kill you. And he had something in mind, the claws, which this means the nails, they are not alive and dead. You cannot say they are alive, because, I bore my nail, it doesn't pain when you cut it. But you also cannot say they are dead, because they grow. There's something in between. So therefore, Lord Nrisimhadev, when he killed Hiranyakashipu using his nails, he used something which was not dead and not alive. But the second point is, Nrisimhadev was the killer, so to say, and he also cannot be called dead, obviously, but also not be called alive in the same way as we are alive. His alive for us means there's a soul which gives power to the body, which is dead without the soul. But in Nrisimhadev's case, his whole body is totally transcendental and beyond the energy of matter. So the last point which I think we have made all the points, but let me just see if one point was not covered well enough. please. Yes, I wanted to... No, I think we have covered it well enough. Much more could be said. Now I want to make my last point, really, which I personally thought of very, very deeply. It's something very relevant. When you hear Krishna's pastimes, be very careful to not become an offender. Never allow in your mind that you think these divine pastimes of the Lord are just like us. It is very easy to become an offender. Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Manushyamam, no. Avajananti mang mudha. Oh, I'm so tired, I cannot have access to my knowledge of Sanskrit words. Avajananti mang mudha. Manushyam tanim avashritam. Thank you, Ramapriya Prabhu. In this verse he says that the fools think my transcendental body to be material, and they deride it. I've often seen this when Krishna Leela is talked about devotees, then devotees start to laugh in a way which is a little disrespectful, which the sound of the laughter is not different than the sound of the laughter in the different thing. This is very bad. Therefore, Krishna Leela must be explained only in a very respectful way, in a very respectful terms, because if we make offenses when hearing Krishna Leela, this is very bad. This is not good. Brahma, therefore, in the Angani Yasya verse, I believe it's the fourth verse of the Chintamani series, where he describes his vision of the transcendental world, he makes it very, very, very clear that the Lord's body is transcendental. Prabhupada once, he turned to us. I was not there, but I heard from devotees. He said to all of us, and then when you really see Krishna, you will see that he is totally different than you ever imagined. Totally different. Because we cannot imagine Krishna's transcendental form. All what we can hear is to very respectfully, almost prayerfully hear from the great devotees about him. And in this way, become purified by the transcendental sound vibration. This is what we can accept. Let me see. I'm sorry. No, it's the fifth. I'm very sorry. I want to find out which verse it is. Yeah, it's the fourth verse, really, of the Chintamani series. So these were the two verses which you always sing each morning. I do hope that when you sing it now, you sing it with some more understanding, so that you will be able to enter more into the verse Prabhupada actually wanted us to. One should recite these verses as a regular daily function. And I don't know if he said it there, but in other places he said one should enter in the secret of the understanding. Hare Krishna. So, Hare Krishna, I want also to end here. Do you have any questions regarding this subject matter? If you do have other questions, we will also hear your other questions, obviously. But let us first see if there are if you have questions regarding this verse. Yes, he was one of the demon associates. Kamsa had these demons around him. Kupcha was not. She supplied sandalwood pulp. But she developed, when she saw Tecumseh, the sandalwood pulp was used by kings to smear themselves in different paraphernalia. Yes. She was then seeing Krishna. When she saw Krishna, she was prepared. She immediately put all the sandalwood pulp on Krishna's transcendental body. She loved Krishna so much. So she served Krishna, but she also served Kamsa, but was not a demon. The Vashaman was, and he got liberated. He protested when Krishna wanted service. Kupya, oh yes, best idea in the world. He immediately said, "You are the best person to give the sandalwood to." Krishna doesn't kill devotees. Dinanath.
My inheritance of Vrindavan by Krishna Brahma for that he actually, they were saying that he actually created the blinking of the eyelids, because Brahma doesn't create,
the inhabitants of Vrindavan, yes.
Brahma creates only material bodies.
Why do the inhabitants of Vrindavan say, "Brahma, you created our eyes"? Well, we know that the inhabitants of Vrindavan have eternal transcendental bodies. See, in Vrindavan, in Braj, there are also demigods, but they are spiritual demigods. they come and look at the pastimes. They are present there as great devotees of Krishna. There they are not like the demigods in this world. So in the world view of the Brijbasis, they have all the demigods and everything, which is a reflection of what is, let me say, there is the original picture, and this is here the reflection. Our demigods are conditioned living entities. The demigods there are great lovers of Krishna. And for pastimes purposes, the demigods, they see, Vrishabhasis think we were created by Lord Brahma, our bodies. They think it, but it is not a fact. For them, Krishna is not their original creator. Like once Uddhava came to Mathura, from Mathura to Vrindavan to give a message, and Nanda Maharaj received him, and Uddhava said, "Your son is the supreme personality of Godhead." Nanda said, "You are very, something is wrong. I thought you were the disciple of Brihaspati. My Gopal is not the supreme personality of Godhead. I have seen him speaking lies. He steals butter. When he doesn't get nourished by Yashoda, he doesn't get breastfed by Yashoda, he cries and makes a big klamauk, does a supreme personality, does Bhagavan, the self-sufficient Narayan, make this?" They serve the pastimes of the Lord just like everyone else.
They have nothing to do with the creation.
No, they don't. No.
We can't speak of creation of spiritual world, but.
No, that is manifested by the Shaktis of Lord, of the Lord, of the Sandini, Kladini, the Sandini mostly.
in those relatives in Finland for now when they seemingly disturb Krishna's path from Sahaja, it was good in English or not?
No, these pastimes, sorry, I have to repeat it. What is with the when we hear of the demigods like Brahma and Indra who disturb the pastimes of the Lord? That happens all in the material world. These are the occasional leelas. They are from this world. How do you like Rukmini Devi's prayer? Isn't it wonderful? My dear devotees, let us try to think like this. When you see, become attracted by the outside form of a man or a woman, remember this verse of Srimati Rukmini Devi. It is very, very good. I remembered this verse once when I was very, very, very sick and very desperate. I was in the dead sea, you say, and my health was very, very bad, very run down, and I needed to go every day to the spa. That's like, you have to sit, to lie for an hour in the sulfur, and it gets in your body, and then it builds up your immune system. And we were going there every day, and then we went down to the Dead Sea to put mud on the body. This mud is sold all over the world for a high price, but there you can get it for free. We put it all over. We looked like, like that, like having fallen into chocolate, and only the eyes were left. And I remember one. I remembered with me there was a pop star which I had seen in pictures, and he was lying next to me, and we preached to him naturally when we were in the sulfur, and then he went and he had a few Maya Devis with him, and a beautiful angel like pop star who wanted his skin to become more soft, because if you do this with a mud, it's good for the skin also. Mud is used for beauty. Women put it all over them, and men also who want to become more soft-skinned or whatever. So, he was not really sick, but he was a real sensualist, and he had this Maya Devi. Her rupa, her form was like from fashion magazines, and he just went over to her and just smeared her whole body with this mud, enjoying, you could see that there was fire in the atmosphere, the fire of lust who were burning them alive into ashes. You could really see that with your philosophical eye. And that time, I was there, I was really, going like this, and then when the body is weak, the mind can also become weak. For a moment I looked at this, and it was shocking, and it was not nice to see for a sannyasi. I think you can imagine the scene. They were laughing and embracing, and it was, it was something for the dirt part of the internet, I was at the same time preparing my Brahmachari seminar, which I intend to give here, I was looking for references to make my Brahmachari seminar good, and I remembered, oh, look at this, Sashinanda Swami, why do you become disturbed and a little repulsed and so on. You just look, it is, they are totally now by the under the energy of the Maya Shakti. It is present here, and he's just touching, you know, mucus or something which is just covered with a soft skin, mucus, blood, urine, sweat. Do I have to go more into the detail? No. It's already enough. And I thought, thank you, Krishna, for this nice verses which you have given, which they are the Bhagavatam. We don't need to become agitated any longer. We can, this is a stop of agitation. When you want to practice brahmacharya, both men and women, you need to have such a vision, but don't stop there. First is, you see, it's described the cobra bath. You see the opposite sex as dangerous and as repulsive even. You wouldn't embrace a cobra, isn't it? Come to my heart. The next thing is, in relationship to women, we should see the women as mothers. You don't have a bad feeling towards a mother. You think, here's what a nice person. And also women towards the men, they see them not as some bad people. And the final and most advanced stage of brahmacharya is to see them all as spiritual soul, parts and parcel of Krishna. They belong to Krishna. Like Prabhupada once, he gave this wonderful... There was a man who was saying, I do not believe in Krishna because of his immoral dancing with millions of gopis in the dead of night. Prabhupada asked him, and another man said, Krishna is an Ehebrecher. What is an Ehebrecher? A marriage breaker. A marriage breaker. That sounds all right. I can't believe in such a God. And then Prabhupada asked the man, how many women do you have? The man was shocked. Oh man, what did you say, Swamiji? Of course, one I married. You are the marriage breaker, said Prabhupada, because your wife belongs to God. You are the marriage breaker. So this is how we want to see ultimately, that everyone belongs to Krishna, is a part and parcel of Krishna. They may be covered with this body and more so with this and that mentality, but they are nevertheless parts of Krishna. This is the best form of brahmacharya. It's also necessary to keep this vision in the marriage so that you can respect your wife and your husband as a part and parcel of the Lord and behave properly towards them. They are parts of Krishna. Okay. Anyone else?
I have difficulty with the second step of brahmacharya. Because,
see them as mothers, yes.
Yes. And yes, the ritual is how I should see the male devotees as my sons or whatever.
Yeah.
Many of them are much older than me. And
yeah.
Even more advanced.
So I have the same. If I, Regina says, I have difficulties with the second step, where it said one should, the brahmachari should see me as mother. And that means, obviously, I should see them as sons, but many are much older than me. That's not possible. I can well imagine, especially with your social background, I can well imagine this difficulty. I also had a long time difficulty saying Mother Vrinda Devi, you know, Vrinda.